Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
He's covered the NBA for almost 20 years. Chris Mannix for Sports Illustrated now joining us live. So I'd make the argument that Philadelphia not only needed to lose this series, but they needed to lose it ugly. So everybody in the room knows, all right, this doesn't work. Because if they won this series, you talk yourself into it because Simmons is so talented and Embiid. So I guess the question this morning, it does feel like it's not salvageable in Philly. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. And I think you're right. If there had been some kind of extenuating circumstance, as there have been the last couple of years, you go back 2 years ago and the Sixers could say, well, we keep this team together because we were one bouncing ball away from potentially beating Toronto. And then maybe we're the champions and not the Raptors. Last year, the bubble, the injury to Ben Simmons, and the lack of shooting that was around them, you could say, well, if we just tweak around the edges, we can bring this group back together. This year, I just have a hard time knowing Daryl Morey, saving Daryl see this and say this is a true championship team. I mean, the numbers for Simmons, Colin, I'm sure you've talked about them. They were atrocious in this series. Worse, he just seems like, as one person told me, the least confident offensive player that he's ever seen, at least on a superstar level. I just don't know how you can witness this postseason and believe that this core group is what you should keep together over the next 3 or 4 years.
By the way, Simmons, you could argue, would have value, like with a Golden State that has two great shooters. And Golden State right now, Clay another injury, Steph aging, Wiggins probably moving on eventually, Wiseman may not be a good fit. I don't know why. I just look at Golden State and I think, that's a strong enough culture where they probably have the belief system they could solve some of this matrix. The Warriors feel like the place to me, or is it? Do you not see it working?
I believe I get what you're saying, that the Warriors are a good fit. I'm not sure what they could offer back that would satisfy Philadelphia in their, you know, quest to be a top-tier team. I mean, Embiid is in the prime of his career right now. You want to keep that momentum going. The team I would look at, Colin, is further north. And that's Portland. I mean, doesn't some kind of straight Damian Lillard C.J. McCollum for Ben Simmons swap make a lot of sense? I mean, the Blazers are basically the Sixers of the West. Like, they have also taken that group as far as they can go. And what they need, as much as anything, is versatility and defense in their backcourt. That's Ben Simmons. What Philadelphia needs, as much as anything, is scoring in its backcourt. That's C.J. McCollum. I mean, they're both, I wouldn't call them distressed assets, especially not McCollum, who is still a high-level player. But to me, that's the deal to make if you're both sides. It seems to resolve some of the issues both these teams have.
All right, so Brooklyn's out. You can certainly blame injuries, but I said this when KD left. You can move around a lot in life, but you'll often incur the same problems because you're moving. You're part of the process of moving, and KD's a spectacular player, but a little bit of a wanderer as a personality. He leaves Steph for Kyrie. I don't like that. Harden's had, you know, playoff success briefly. I kind of look at Brooklyn and I think, okay, I could look at it this way and go, KD's great and super teams are better in year two. Or I could look at it, Chris, and go, like every super team, once you go to a third star, you have no bench. So you're going to ask Kyrie to play more and Harden to play more and KD to play more. And they're going to get hurt. Like, there's a riddle here that's hard to solve when you have three huge contracts, right?
Yes, in a general sense, that's definitely true. One thing that the Nets, I think, have going for them is that they proved over the last few months that they are the preferred destination for some of the bigger names out there. I mean, they got Blake Griffin to turn down other opportunities to go and be a role player in Brooklyn. They got LaMarcus Aldridge to turn down other opportunities, including Miami, to go and play in Brooklyn. Now, the Aldridge situation didn't work out for health reasons, but I do think over the next few months, as free agency begins, you are going to see some of those, quote, ring chasers place a priority on going to Brooklyn. The Nets also have something to figure out with Spencer Dinwiddie. Maybe they can bring him back or use him in some kind of sign and trade to bring back some value in return. So I don't know. Your two scenarios there, I lean towards more the former, because I think fully healthy, this Nets team without any substantive additions is probably the favorite to win the Eastern Conference next year. And just from talking to agents, I get the sense that we will see one or two guys on short-term deals go to Brooklyn for a chance to play and play for a winner.
So Phoenix and the Clippers feels like a seven-gamer to me. I thought Devin Booker really seized the leadership role. We know he's a talent. That's indisputable. But that he felt like he was running the show yesterday. This is my team. Distribute, defend. He did it all. So I think if you're Phoenix this morning, we won without Chris Paul. That is a great feeling. But in the other thing, though, I know people inside the Clippers building, and they actually think they match up really well. They play nine guys. They can withstand. I mean, they spread the minutes out, so they almost get better as the series goes on. I guess I lean Phoenix, but boy, barely this morning. What do you make of game one and going forward?
I mean, really impressive showing by Phoenix. I know that the Clippers were also down their superstar, but to have Paul in the lineup, to get another strong game from Cameron Payne, to have Booker take over in the way he did of the second half of that game, you've got to be more than satisfied if you're the Suns. Now, I lean towards the Clippers as well, in part because some of the success, a lot of the success that the Clippers had in the first two rounds was because they went away from traditional lineups and went small. You could do that in a matchup with Dallas. You could do that, or you did that in a matchup with the Jazz. Can you do the same thing with Phoenix? I know they were able to take Gobert out of his game in that series, but Ayton, a little bit more offensively skilled than Gobert, runs the floor maybe a little bit better than Gobert. I think that's going to be the challenge for Ty Lue. How many minutes can he get out of that small lineup that's been so effective for him for the last month? And how many minutes does he have to play more traditionally where, you know, even with Zubac playing at his best, I don't think he's a match for DeAndre Ayton.
You know, a lot of people have blamed the condensed schedule for the injuries, and I would push back by saying, well, Kyrie's been hurt a lot, and Embiid's been hurt a lot, and Mike Conley, and, you know, Nurkic, and a lot of these guys who are hurt, Kawhi, have been hurt a lot. Now, Donovan Mitchell, maybe that's a fatigue issue, but Jaylen Brown was a wrist surgery, if I recall. That's not a fatigue issue. What I mean, and so I picked the Milwaukee Bucks to win, not because I love them, but I said on the air, I said, their best players don't get hurt. And I'm watching this league this year, and everybody's falling apart. And that's one of the reasons I like them. They're a little bit of a fortress. They're not the most elegant, but what do you make of the injury? Should we blame the condensed thing, or the reality is Anthony Davis doesn't work terribly hard in the offseason, has to play himself in shape, and this is what James Harden similarly – this is what happens when you play yourself in shape.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a big part of it. Not coming to training camp in the best of shape is as much a variable as the condensed schedules. Members of training staffs will tell you, though, that having to return to the days of four games and five nights, which, as you know, have been largely legislated out of the league, you know, before this pandemic shortened season, that has had an impact on sprained ankles, on groin injuries, some of the soft tissue stuff that's out there. But you have to look at all these case by case. I mean, Kawhi Leonard played, what, 52 games in the regular season? He didn't hurt his knee because of a condensed schedule. Similarly, Anthony Davis has been plagued by similar injuries to this over the course of his career. I don't think that had anything to do with a condensed schedule either. So you can point to specific examples, maybe James Harden, maybe a couple of others, and say that happened because of the condensed schedule. But Donovan Mitchell in the Indiana game went down with a nasty ankle sprain because he stepped on somebody's foot. The same thing can be said with Kyrie Irving. He stepped on somebody's foot. That's just bad luck. That has nothing to do with how the season has been squeezed together.
Finally, you know, it's Atlanta is interesting. So we see this a lot in football where Russell Wilson got other guys drafted. He literally got other guys drafted. And, you know, the idea years ago was you got to be 6'4", you got to be sitting in the pocket, and then Russell Wilson runs away and wins a Super Bowl, and everybody's like, oh, you can draft Kyler Murray and smaller Johnny Manziel. And I watched Trae Young, And I think to myself, he's small, he's tiny, he doesn't defend, there's a lot of turnovers, and he just blasts through it all. I mean, even yesterday was 3 for 20. He just blasts through it all. And maybe he got drafted because of Steph. Or, you know, I look at Simmons, who does everything right but can't shoot. Trey does a lot wrong but can. And I think to myself, boy, Trey Young is going to get shooters drafted. Like, that kid is so dynamic. Or am I overstating his impact beyond that?
No, I think you're right. I think that if you are looking at college players, or eventually the next couple of years, high school players, if they have that shooting ability, they are going to rocket up draft boards past guys that don't, or a little bit more of a work in progress. You have to remember too, Travis Schlenk, the GM of Atlanta, who drafted Trae Young, he came from the Golden State system. He worked under Bob Myers with the Warriors. He understands players like this and their value. So I think guys that, like Trey, that are, I don't want to call them one-dimensional, but are far more offensive-oriented than defense, they're going to be the preferred guys to draft. Now, one thing about Simmons that, that is going to plague him throughout. You know, Simmons has bad form. Like, he needs to adjust his jump shot. There are people that would argue he needs to change hands and shoot with a different hand. It's been done, Colin, where guys adjust their form and become high-level shooters. Kawhi Leonard is a great example. Came out of San Diego State, not a shooter, worked with Chip Englund, revised his shot, and is now one of the better shooters in the NBA. If I'm Ben Simmons moving forward, my path to becoming the superstar I believe I am is changing my shot, embracing it, and then working to get better there. This current path that Ben Simmons is on, it might lead him to multiple more All-Star appearances, but it's not going to lead him to anything more than playoff failure.
Chris Mannix, NBA writer, senior writer, Sports Illustrated. Great stuff, Chris, as always. Thanks, man.
You got it, Colin.
Yeah, you do get to a point where rules legislate a lot of what teams do. And, you know, a great example now, it is much harder to run your way to a Super Bowl. So the value of wide receivers in pro football has grown. Remember when the Atlanta Falcons traded everybody to get Julio Jones? Well, he was highly productive. Why? Because the rules have changed. You used to be able to grab a wide receiver off the line. You can't. You can't hit receivers over the middle. So the value, I used to call wide receivers thin icing on a cake. Didn't matter that much. But in the end now, they're becoming more of the cake. They're becoming more of the left tackle, the great corner, the quarterback, the Mike linebacker who calls signals. So in the NBA, similarly, is that it is such an offensive league because, you know, what you want is more offense and more scoring, is that Trae Young can have all sorts of flaws. But if you can shoot a three like that and you have that level of confidence, it kind of washes over your inefficiencies. I mean, you look at the LA Rams draft, they just receiver. We're going to hit on one of these. You got the quarterback right, give him a little protection on the O-line, and you'll just keep drafting receivers until you hit the guy. Mm-hmm. So you can do so much right in the NFL, but if you don't have perimeter speed, they're just limitation. Kansas City doesn't have to do everything right, but when they got the burners on the outside, I mean, look at New England, the best coach in the league, Tom Brady. In the end, they're so slow offensively on the perimeter, you can have the greatest coach and the greatest quarterback ever, and Tom's last year in New England, you can't beat Tennessee. And so I think in the NBA, you look at Trae Young, it's like, he's not the answer for everything, but when you do that thing in this league now, well, you should go look at Trae Young's draft prospectus. That weakness thing was long. Turnovers, wild, small body, won't defend, casual, indifferent to, can shoot. And it solves a lot of problems.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Alex with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
So John Rahm won U.S. Open this weekend, marking his first ever major win. He made back-to-back birdies on the 17th and 18th hole to secure a one-stroke lead, and no other golfer was able to catch him at 6-under par. Now, the win comes just 2 weeks after he was forced to withdraw from the Memorial Tournament with a 6-shot lead because of a positive COVID test. And his big win also fell on Father's Day, just 10 weeks after he welcomed his son. Now, I love a good story, and this is the ultimate feel good story for John.
Well, the U.S. Open has a history of being tough on golfers and sometimes big hitters. And Bryson DeChambeau went into the tank, and Brooks Koepka, who I think is a better golfer, a more nuanced, well-rounded golfer than DeChambeau, he even struggled. So it was one of those where you know you're a hot golfer when everybody around you is struggling and you're hitting those kind of putts. So, and he was a great story.
Yeah,
he was a great,
it's
easy
great
guy
story
to root for.
Yeah. Look at that. I love that. Just warmed your heart. Okay, moving on. The Rams went all in on Matthew Stafford and have high expectations for what he can bring to LA next season. Sean McVay is clearly very excited about his new quarterback. He said, whatever people say about him, as good as it can be, he's even better than advertised. It makes sense to him, the guy's ability to see the game, his ability to draw on his experiences, the feel that he has, it's pretty special and unique. And man, his feel for people, his authentic way of connecting with his teammates, his coaches, this guy, it's great being around him.
You know, it's very interesting how public McVay has been with his admiration.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was funny, the Jared Goff situation. It wasn't that they moved off him. It was they were very critical of him publicly. And I always thought Goff came across as a nice guy and a good kid. But it is interesting. And part of me, I had lunch with a real smart NFL guy the other day. McVay is in this division, and Matt LaFleur, McVay, and Kyle Shanahan, they're all boys, right? They were on that Washington staff. Well, McVay now ends up in conference championships. Shanahan is beating McVay in division, and there's pressure on Sean.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like losing.
Yeah.
You know, LaFleur's up there on top of the world. Shanahan's beating him in division head-to-head. And Sean has gotten more aggressive in the last year, pointing some fingers, and, you know, the Goff thing. I mean, it's one thing to get Stafford, but he has made multiple positive comments publicly on Stafford, which is simultaneously dogging Goff.
I mean, he's saying all the right things, what you want to hear about a player. And this is Stafford's chance. You know, he's got the weapons. He's got a good coach. I feel like this will be a make or break season for him. But if everything that McVay is saying is true, it could be a special season for the Rams.
Yeah, it should be.
Should be. You hope so. Well, let's move to the 49ers, because they have a clear plan for rookie Trey Lance as he prepares for his first NFL season. According to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, the team focused on Lance's mechanics during OTAs and mini camps so they can unleash his full arsenal when they get to training camp. They reportedly want to show him off as both a runner and a passer and love the dimensions he can bring to Kyle Shanahan's offense. Now, they've made it clear Jimmy G is their guy this season, but it's not far-fetched with Jimmy's injury history that we might see Trey start a game this year.
I think he'll listen, if it all comes down to the preseason isn't important for all players, but for Justin Fields or a Trey Lance or even a Mac Jones that didn't, like, I mean, Mac Jones did not have a lot of college starts. Trey Lance did not have a lot of college starts. Like, these preseason games, the live bullets flying, that, like, they matter. Justin Fields had a lot of college games, but for Justin Fields, can I embrace very quickly a pretty sophisticated NFL offense? It's a big ask for these guys. So, this will be a really good preseason.
Yeah.
Like, there's three or four really interesting quarterback storylines, and they're all going to unfold in late August.
Because Jimmy's had some big injuries. 2018, he missed 13 games with ACL. Last season, 10 games with the ankle injury. That's a lot of games you're missing on injuries.
That's why they drafted Trey Lance. Yeah. Alex with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live
News. Our three-word game with the 8 NBA teams left.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Chris Mannix, Al Harrington, Chris Broussard stopped by today. Great to see Al Harrington, who was in the league with the Pacers for a long time. So We got four teams left. Clippers Suns got underway yesterday. Phoenix won. Hawks Bucks starts Wednesday. And best for last, we're going to play, Alex, the three-word game for the eight teams that made the second round. Here we go.
Phoenix Suns.
Hotter than sun. Eight straight wins. Longest win streak in franchise history. Playoff win streak. They've outscored opponents by 15 points per game during the streak. And Devin Booker, and this is what should be the truth, 29 a game during the streak, 52% field goal percentage. So the Suns have also relied on the mid-range game. Chris Paul will shoot it. Devin Booker will shoot it. He doesn't have to. I mean, the bottom line, when you're shooting 52% and you're a shooting guard like Devin Booker and that dynamic, that's why they've not only won eight straight, they're winning them by 15 per game.
Los Angeles Clippers.
Paul wasn't appalling. Paul George, last five games, again, 32 points a game, eight rebounds, shooting 45% on threes. Earlier, Al Harrington told us he's a gym rat. Gym rats usually work through their issues. And it's funny, when Kawhi Leonard got hurt, my first instinct was they're doomed. But Kawhi and Paul George are both great wings that defend. And so it's not like they went from being great in the wing to not having one. They still had Paul George, a seven-time All-Star. And to this point, they are good enough without Kawhi to at least get through Utah.
Utah Jazz.
Face the music. Best record in the West over the last five regular seasons, but haven't advanced past the conference semis in the last 15 years. They, don't blame Quinn Snyder, they have a huge issue they've got to get solved. And that is, they do not have elite wing defenders or, frankly, dependable athletic wing scorers. Bogdanovich can hit threes, but they are very guard dependent. They are also, if you keep Rudy Gobert on the floor, you have a non-offensive threat, and that is increasingly difficult when you're facing these Clippers and you're facing the Suns and Denver, and a lot of these teams, when healthy, can score. So there are some limitations to their personnel. Gobert is a great defensive player. He's a little like Ben Simmons, an offensive liability. And when Donovan Mitchell got banged up, who's their second guaranteed athletic scorer?
Denver Nuggets.
Suns in four. Simple as that. Jokic was great, but no other Nugget averaged more than 16 points or averaged more than six rebounds in a series. Now, the good news is Jamal Murray comes back. Michael Porter, really good. Can you depend on him? But Jamal Murray's injury pretty much sealed their fate.
Milwaukee Bucks.
Greek freak peak. After going down 0-2, Giannis was a monster. 34 a game, 14 rebounds, 56% from the floor. And this is important, he was super aggressive at the end of games. You could see he'd lost confidence. Remember that moment against James Harden late in the game when he avoided contact? He did a fall-away jumper on Harden because he didn't want to end up at the free throw line. He was aggressive. He's just good enough at the free throw line.
Atlanta Hawks.
Birds of Trey. First team since the 94 Pacers to make the conference final with no All-Stars. And, you know, they've got a lot of solid guys. Six different players averaged 10-plus points during the series against the Sixers. Now, Trey Young averaged 29. So I do feel like to become a championship team, they've got to have one more nightly 18 to 20 point a game guy, you know, like a Paul George guy. They're not going to get Paul George, but I don't think it's a championship team. I think they faced an offensively deficient New York Knicks team and a chemistry deficient Sixers team. I do think they've met their match. I think Milwaukee is much bigger and more physical and more seasoned, and I think Milwaukee disposes of Atlanta in pretty quick order.
Philadelphia 76ers.
Bust the process. They haven't got past the conference semis in 19, 20 years. Ben Simmons attempted, seriously, three total shots. in the fourth quarter in this series against the Hawks. By the way, none in the last four games. So, you know, you're going to have to break it up. I think Portland and Golden State, there's value with Ben Simmons if you surround him with guys who can shoot. He's long, he can defend, he can handle the ball, he's got nice vision. There's a lot going on that works. But he is clearly not a number one. He cannot be a number one. He's not dependable. Can he be a two? That's yet to be seen. He could possibly be a great three if you give him two shooters. What you can't have is what Philadelphia does, a dominating big that clogs the lane, because where he has to score is at the rim.
Brooklyn Nets.
Eight games together. I mean, Big Three played 14 games together all year. 6-2 in the regular season with the fellas. 5-1 in the playoffs. The other issue, which is, I think we all know this. This is not some revelation. They have $122 million against the cap next year between Harden, Durant, and Kyrie. So 78% of their money is spent. So what you're going to need is when you go to a third great player, Golden State or Miami, you've got to take guys willing to take a pay cut. That's not going to be young players. You got to find a Shea Battier or a Mike Miller or a Ray Allen that just, they want rings. You know, they want to be on television in June. Golden State, can you get an Andre Iguodala or somebody that will stay around for a couple years because he wants to win games? So, you know, I think Brooklyn, it's pretty obvious. They're never going to have a great bench. And the problem with that is twofold. One, a good bench matters. Like Phoenix's bench yesterday shot over 50% and gave you 60 minutes. The bench for Brooklyn did not make a basket, you know, in game seven. There's a difference. The problem when you have three stars is not only do you have virtually no bench, but you force your three stars, often veteran players with lots of wear on their tires, to play massive minutes. What happened? KD, Steph broke down. What happened? D-Wade broke down. What happens? Kyrie and Harden break down. So when you go big with three stars, bad bench, you force your stars to play more minutes, and unless you have like a LeBron James, who until recently never got hurt, it's a dilemma. All right, good stuff today. NBA playoffs were fun. The U.S. Open was fun to watch. Some soccer this weekend as well. And, here we are. A couple of things. I don't think it's everything, but I do think it is something. Let's not downplay how valuable this is. Aaron Rodgers, I know this sounds pithy and insignificant, has joined the Green Bay Country Club for this year. Now, he didn't join it forever, and it's not a lot of money, and he's a very wealthy young man. But it tells me, unless Aaron is trolling people, he is returning to camp. Why? Because the best golf months are 4th of July to Labor Day in Wisconsin. It's a beautiful place to golf. Crisp, cool nights. Well, he wouldn't join this if he was holding out of camp and going to arrive in September, where now the season's underway and he's catching up. You would join this if you're going to move back there, you're going to golf. They don't do two-a-days anymore. Aaron's got time to go hit the links. I know it sounds pithy. I know it doesn't sound like anything. This tells me he's going to return to camp. Seriously. Tom Brady put his house up for sale. It was the ultimate tell. I'm eventually moving on. So Green Bay, there you go. And for the record, that is a stunning,
stunning
golf club. Who knew? Alex, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's The Herd. See you tomorrow.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.